You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. The Governor's Office of Emergency Services, known as CalOES, is always preparing for the state's next big disaster. The office was activated, for example, when those earthquakes shook Southern California over the 4th of July weekend. CalOES Director Mark Ghilarducci recently talked with CAP Radio's Randall White about disaster preparedness and at what point OES gets involved.
If the event becomes more than what that local government can handle, and of course, that happens very rapidly, right? We've seen these events grow in size and complexity very, very fast and become multi-jurisdictional, multi-county, multi-region. And so we step in pretty quick. And really, it's really making sure that we get resources committed to that incident early to be able to stay out in front of the disaster. And what I mean by that is as the disaster evolves, as it gets worse, we want to have our resources and our capabilities in place to really mitigate the effects of that expanding disaster.
How does the state figure out where to put those resources on any given day?
We have, of course, state assets that are staged in locations throughout the state that are relatively strategic, and they're either in Southern California or central part of the state or in the north. We also have our equipment that is embedded in local government fire agencies throughout the state. We have agreements. Local government firefighters staff our equipment, and then we can move them out throughout the state. And those pieces of equipment are also staged strategically. We have the state mapped out by region. For example, we have hazardous materials and search and rescue capabilities in the high seismic areas, areas where it's going to be a high chemical plant concentration, whereas we have our wildland fire engines and some of our other capabilities in the urban wildland interface. The thing about it is that there's really not a part of California where we all don't depend upon all of the resources for one thing or another. So the key thing is being able to really assess what's happening at the time, good situational awareness, working closely with our partners at Cal Fire and the California Highway Patrol to be able to get a quick assessment of what's happening. And then our mutual aid systems that are able to provide those resources in a very timely way.
You mentioned that some of these disasters in recent years have crossed county boundaries or jurisdictional boundaries. Several recent high-profile disasters, communication became a problem, either between those counties or between emergency services. And in some cases, residents did not get warnings to leave. I'm thinking about the Tubbs Fire, right? Mm-hmm. Very few people were alerted of the approaching disaster. And then in the Camp Fire, the Chico Enterprise Record put it this way last December. They said it was a black hole of communication. And then they say in disasters, our high-tech communities are reduced to 1940s era responses. How does your organization approach the problem of communication when everything's going haywire?
You know, we have 58 counties and a lot of jurisdictions throughout the state. And all of the counties have had historically a communications capability to put out alerts and warnings. And the issue, and in fact, they were used to some degree in both events, both up north in the Camp Fire and then down south in the Woolsey Fire and the Tubbs Fire. But the issue is that they were not used consistently. It wasn't timely enough. A lot of that was based around inadequate situational awareness and inconsistencies in training across all the counties. So the first thing is that we really looked into this. Last March, we laid out new guidelines for all counties within the state, in essence, standards that we want all counties to be operating under that build in consistent terminology, timeframes, the methodology, and the technology that's going to be used to ensure that those messages get out to the public in a timely fashion. As technology improves and our ability to send that message out gets better and better, those guidelines need to be updated accordingly. It's important to note, though, that you know, we as a society have moved off of landlines, hard lines, and moved into a cellular network sort of system. That's how we get our communication. The cellular network, the cell sites, it's not a government-run system. It's privately owned, right, and privately managed. The key thing is that we can ask the telecommunications industry to ensure that those sites are hardened and resilient to disaster. But in reality, if they go down, then communication can get interrupted. And we have had failures in that system in all of the events that's taken place. So I would tell people who are listening, this is about personal preparedness and understanding the risks of the area that you live in and being aware of what you're seeing in the conditions, and then having a plan that if you need to get out of an area, if there's a wildfire nearby, or, you know, take the proactive action, call the fire department, find out what's happening to be able to make a decision to evacuate or not.
Mark, in your guidelines that have have been suggested to counties, what is the best practice for alerting residents? Because I know that there's been concern that if a mass alert goes out, then it might create an exodus and traffic jams and make it hard for emergency response teams to get to the problem. What are you telling counties to do?
I think that that sort of depiction of sending an alert out sends panic really has not rung true, and we have not seen that. Really, we want counties to issue an emergency alert when the time is right.
What form would that alert take?
If you live in a particular county, you can sign up on an alert network and opt in, although, you know, there's a new law that was put in place last year that is going to put everybody into a alerting system anyway. You don't have to really opt in anymore.
Like a reverse 911?
Yeah, those are local. Those are commercial, a Code Red, Alert 911. These are all different kinds of systems that counties use, and we want individuals in their respective counties to sign in. But the county also has the ability to use the wireless emergency alert system. That is a federal system that we all participate in. We talk about it in the guideline, and we want the counties to use that as well. That preempts all other emergency alert systems in your phone. If you're traveling through an area, say you're from another state, you will get that alert. And that is really important because that way we're maximizing the number of people that will get the alert during that time.
Is it time to bring back sirens? If the communication networks are going down for various reasons, that would be sort of a last analog resort, right?
There's a number of communities that are looking at putting sirens back in as a form of alerting. It works in some communities. It does not work in others. And, of course, you have to keep in mind that sirens also come with a significant amount of public education. What does it mean when you hear the siren? Where do you go? What do you do? It is sort of old school technology by comparison to getting, you know, an alert on your phone if you're not by your home and you don't hear the siren. However, I will just say that there are communities around the state that are looking at the siren system or updating the sirens that they have in their community.
Cal OES has an office of access and functional needs. Can you tell us how that works?
That office is there to engage and interface with the access and functional needs population. That's a very broad population, but, you know, everything from our aging community to individuals that are homebound or bound to some sort of a mobile device, a wheelchair of some sort.
Which we saw a lot in Paradise.
We saw a lot in Paradise, and there's a lot of senior care homes in Paradise and a lot of senior citizens in Paradise. Making sure that elements in local and state emergency plans address access and functional needs, making sure we have enough resources during a disaster. It's not good enough to just open up a shelter to be able to put refugees from a disaster. These individuals require a different kind of shelter, a different kind of bedding system, different kinds of bathrooms and showers. And so we really stepped that up to ensure that those are rapidly provided and in place.
And that includes the communication need of speaking a common language.
And as well, in the guidelines that I talked about earlier, and when we put alert and warnings out, what it means if you're blind or you can't hear, with the vibration of your phone or what you're getting, all of that is very important. So we have to think down to the detail of the end user.
Following some of the mass shootings, I understand OES is involved in training to help counties deal with these situations?
We are. You know, our other role besides emergency management is we're the Homeland Security Agency for California. So we have a law enforcement role, and our role with regards to ensuring for the overarching security of the state. We implement and carry out the state's Homeland Security strategy. And part of that is training state and local governments and even individuals on issues related to active shooter and counterterrorism and a whole gamut of kinds of things. We've done a lot with schools, being able to work and ensure that schools have the appropriate training for teachers and administrators. And we have a California Specialized Training Institute as our training arm. We have a big campus in San Luis Obispo, but we train all over the state. We put thousands of students through that every year. And that's an all-hazard training area. We train in everything from earthquake response and recovery and management and all the above through the disasters, and then all of our criminal justice program.
I would assume that you believe we should all have a go bag.
Well, everybody should have a plan. Let's start off with that. So that means that you need to get an assessment of where you live. If you're living on an earthquake fault or near one, if you're living in a wildfire area, if you're living next to a levee or a flood, you know, a lot of people in Sacramento live next to levees. If you're living next to a chemical facility, you want to do an assessment of where you're at. And then you want to look at things like, if I had to get out, what is my primary evacuation route, secondary and tertiary? I always have three because your first two could be blocked for whatever reason, right? So you want to have a third. Then you want to talk with your family, or if you're, you know, individual, you want to exercise that. Okay, if I need to get out, let's run these routes so that I know what they look like in the daytime. I know what they look like in the nighttime. And then you want to have a communications plan, which is really based upon having an identified place that your family, if you're separated, can come and get to, or that you can all call into somebody, preferably out of the state or out of the area that you live in, because the phone system is down. Outside of it, it's probably not. So you can all call and say, okay, we're safe. Social media also has capabilities of that. I encourage people in communities to look and see if they've got a neighborhood watch program or My Next Door or something like that that has the ability that the neighbors can share information with each other, and or you can pin yourself, I'm okay, on a social media site. And then you need to have some supplies. It's not uncommon that you will lose power. We may lose gas service, depending on the kind of disaster, for several days. And that means that you need to have a capability. You may want to have an emergency generator, but understand that it has to be operated outside and you know how to use it, which means you have to practice all this stuff. So it's an investment in your own empowerment. And we have found that the more people do this, the more empowered they are, the better they can withstand the effects of these kinds of events.
That was Cal OES Director Mark Ghilarducci in conversation with CAP Radio's Randall White. You can find wildfire resources and much more information at capradio.org. This is Insight on CAP Radio.